Hello and welcome to Mrevishira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. This episode is brought to you in association with DigiTales. I am Namita Ramani Sharma, your host for this episode. Our guest for today is a veteran PR and communication expert who has built, grown and defended brand across Asia Pacific and beyond. He's a founder and managing director of Precious Communication. In this episode, we are chatting to Mr. Lars Wolters, managing director and principal consultant of Precious Communication. Mr. Lars, thank you so much for taking time and accepting our request. We welcome you to Mrevishira podcast. Mr. Lars, you started Precious in a Starbucks somewhere in Singapore in 2012. Now it has become a nearly 80-strong multi-award winning integrated PR agency with a presence across 7 countries. Precious is now an integrated and holistic communication consultancy offering strategic advisory content insight through a dedicated content team. It works with strong startups as well as global market leaders and government agencies. Mr. Lars, we're going to talk about your career to date and the recent win at PRCA APAC Gala in Singapore for Paul Alto. Also, some insight for Precious becoming an official PR partner at Echelon Asia Summit, which will be held in Singapore in June. So tell us a bit about your journey so far and how is the future looking like?
Thanks. First and foremost, thanks for having me, Namita. I'm really excited to speaking with you today. I was just thinking about this morning that I'm coming at a point where you start looking into your, dividing your life into decades. That's normally not a good sign. But all fun aside, I started out actually studying economics, wanted to become a journalist. Then I put those two together with a business mindset and did corporate communications in-house, was 5 years with DHL when they became yellow. Yes, they were not always yellow. That only happened in 2003. And wow. Then moved over from the in-house side to some global agency networks, was 3 years with Dow Jones. And then, in 2012 decided, let's put all this politics and red tape and things that hold you back from being creative and awesome aside, and let's try it on my own. And that was just when also the kind of second wave started here in this part of the world in 2012. So I tried all the kind of hacks of getting up at 4 a.m. From StarHub and all these kind of things, and did a lot of mistakes that I think when if you're an entrepreneur you have to make. And now 11 years later, we are actually way beyond 80. We're close to 100 people now. We had a fantastic year last year. We grew 40% strong quarter one, and ready to grow further as our clients want us to grow with them.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's quite a long journey you've had, Nicholas. Okay, so as you know that the global recession seems likely and fear over rising inflation and interest rates remain. Do you think public relation and investor relation functions should work in tandem or in collaboration with each other to maintain a clear communication, or a PR team should only handle investor relation? That's like a, I mean, there were few instances in the past where we've seen that the communication team and the investor relations team were not on the same page. So tell us some bit about that.
Okay, let's first take a step back. And I don't think it's clear that we'll have a recession. And if you look at economic forecasts, they change every week. Somebody likened it to watching the painting La Mona Lisa, right? Every time you look at the smile seems to be different, and that's how economic forecasts seem to be these days. So it's more the uncertainty in the markets than being clear where it's going, and that makes investors extremely nervous. Certainty is what everybody needs. And in this kind of climate of certainty, that's when you have to instill some kind of certainty in the market as a listed company, as a company that wants to grow, as an investment firm. That's why I believe it's absolutely crucial that all forms of communication in an organization, internal communications, your marketing ATLs, your PR, and your investor relations are actually aligned. Because otherwise you're trying to, turn the clock back like 40 years ago, where you could only speak to an investor audience or only to your staff and assume that they wouldn't talk to each other. And I believe the recent incident with Silicon Valley Bank showed that if mistakes they've done in the communications remit, because that news spread across the general public and created that and elevated that panic in the market, and then that basic the bank run, right? I know they have different objectives, and especially for investor relations, you have to be very much following rules. You have to be very clear on regulations, what you can say, when, to whom, what you can't say, be very clear about the timelines of quiet periods, your financial announcements, but you have to work together. That's for me the most important thing. And interestingly also for some of our clients, we work very closely with them so that we can adjust and align the key messages. Because, you know, bringing and creating and drumming up a company story is nothing about one financial release or one interview. It's a story that you've built over time. Reputation is something that takes time. And we have others where we are presented with financials as a matter of fact, and it works completely separately, what makes our job more difficult, because then sometimes our spokespeople even get caught off guard. So, yes, investor relations and public relations definitely should work together, but it's the same like with any method of communications, like your internal stakeholders, your employees, who sometimes also just find out news from updates about your company from the news. That's, I think, even worse.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Lal. I completely agree that they should actually work in collaboration with each other and maintain a clear communication. My next question is basically, it's an attention-driven economy right now, where you rightly said that, you know, you just don't communicate with one audience, but you'll have to maintain communication for all the audience in a much clearer way, and we are competing for attention because the attention spans have reduced. So how do you help your clients develop authority, credibility, and legitimacy in the current times?
So first of all, it's important to understand that don't get caught in that red race of always on attention seeking. Unless you're really a top consumer facing brand that has to work there. Most of our clients are more in the B2B space, and be very clear what you want to do. And I'll give you an example. A lot of clients invested a lot of energy in their social media channels, and then you just do so many, I call it hygiene posts, just to be there, but they're meaningless actually. They don't give any attention. They try to get attention, but without actually adding real value to your audiences. So with more and more clients, we actually advise them to do slightly less, but do meaningful communications work. Because then what you have to say is meaningful, and meaningful, great content actually travels. So it's really not advisable to do that always seeking attention for attention's sake model, and rather go into defining what is the area that you have and earned and deserve to be an authority in, and then double down on that. And that directly relates to something I'm really passionate about, is thought leadership. Everybody want to be a thought leader. The challenge is not everybody has original thoughts. If you want to be a thought leader, you have to really think, have an opinion, step maybe out of the norm, be provoking, take a risk with your leadership there. And too many brands want to do one without the other. They want to be seen as a leader in thoughts and ideas without actually having provoking or new thoughts and ideas, and that can't work. And then you're just having that mellow, vanilla, what everybody does kind of story out there and wondering why it's not cutting through, right? So that's kind of, I believe, where it's going. It's like, have original, great content that connects, that creates value. And if it's less, then it's okay. But don't try to compensate lack of thought with volume.
Wow, that's interesting. So do you think that companies should take stance like this way or no way? So when and how to speak up and make statement on social issues in an authentic manner? Because everybody, you said, want to be want to gain attention, but then a lot of companies would want to speak on social issues as well. So how do you basically take stance?
Not every company needs to have a clear stand on social issues, mm-hmm. but I believe companies that want to connect with their wider stakeholder audience, with their investors, with their staff, with their customers, with the communities they work in, it's very important that it's clear what they stand for. And then if you have that topic that you are talking about that you stand for, you should take a stand on that. But if you don't have a topic or you don't have something related to a certain topic, don't jump on it just to be part of a conversation, right? So if you want to be, and you make it known that you're an inclusive employer, then you should take a stand on topics related to being an inclusive employer and what it means, and also having painful discussions in territories where it might be different. But if you just want to be the number one leader in what's next in cloud computing, then that's the topic you should do. Or if you want to talk about ethics of AI, then that's the topic you own and go with, right? If you want to be the number one in brewing sustainable beer, then talk about sustainability in the context of beer brewing. So be very clear about what do you stand for as a brand, and then take a stand in this area. Don't do it again for the sake of attention seeking. Otherwise it will backfire, because then also people don't know what does the company stand for. And is it the company and its values, or is it just one leader that likes the limelight, right? Generally, I believe that brands are getting more humanized, and that means they should have values. They make mistakes. They stand up for what they believe in. But you know, same like us in a cocktail party, some of us are more outspoken about what we believe in, and others are a little bit more taking it in and listening, and don't want to provoke, or don't want to stand out, or don't want to, you know, shake the table.
So, Lars, you've worked on various brands. Could you just share some case studies or some experiences that you have who maintain it pretty well?
Heineken, for example, they are very committed to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Mm-hmm. And they are looking at it in every community they engage in. Like, the number one ingredient for every beer is water. So they're very clear about how do they source water, how do they give water back. Electricity, how do they source electricity? What do they do with the vessels the product is in? So I can give you the example of Singapore, where they actually do bottles recycling, and there are only two breweries that do bottles recycling on scale. And it's actually more expensive than just putting it into landfill, because rubbish is underpriced, but they're doing it out of conviction, out of what the brand stands for. Tiger beer in Singapore is brewed by the sun, because the electricity needed comes from the solar panels they have on the roof. And it's a very tricky part, especially in ESG. You should talk what you're doing, but it's the tricky part of, it doesn't matter how much you do, you can easily always get called out for not doing enough. So it's a very tricky one there. On human rights, I mean, look at companies that, I haven't worked with them, but Netflix, the kind of content they put out there and how it creates tension in some markets or not. So there's so many examples where brands, one, have an opinion, have a stance, and they go out for that one. And at the same time, that also means they have to adjust their way, their communications on how they do business, depending on the communities they're in, because cultural differences, sensitivities are different from market to market.
That's right. Mr. Lars, the technology is actually it's basically turning around how the PR works, the ChatGPT and many AI functions, which basically helping the PR professionals go a little smoother, or probably write the content a little better. But I think there's a gap that, you know, how do we be more agile while we using these technology? like you said, the brands are becoming more humanized, but of course on the other end we are using technology. So how do we maintain that agility in the brand?
So first of all, brands have used technology, or marketers or any function actually has used technology since the wheel or the hammer was invented, right? It's important to know what you use these tools for, when you use them, and be clear about it, right? A hammer can't replace an architect. ChatGPT can't replace original thought. If you think about it, what ChatGPT or other AIs in that field are doing, they are recycling, reusing, reframing content that's out there. Not much originality there, if you think about it, right? So what does it mean for us? It means as communicators, we have to think about where and when is it useful and ethical to use it, because unless we know how those tools are also biased, we might just have biased content. We've seen examples where content coming out of those machines is factually incorrect, right? So we have to be very clear when and how we use it. And a great example is Wired, a magazine out of the US that has very clear guidelines when they use it, what they use it for, and when they don't use it. It's a great optimization tool, for example, for headline optimization, SEO optimization. For thought leadership, again, maybe not that much. Having quick answers, right? That's great. But then the question is, how do we use any tool? So for these chat AIs, it's about prompting. We have to learn how to prompt, how to ask questions and expand on them, deduct information, add something. So it's a different creative pathway that the machine, again, can't replace. With the caveat, we always have to think about, is what that tool gives us 100% correct? You know, think about accountants when the calculator came. They thought they'll all lose their jobs. No, it just made their job more efficient, and they can maybe focus more on analytics or insights or actionable kind of information. And that's what we as communicators have also think about. Any tool that comes out there, how does it help us to do a better job?
I love your example of hammer. I really loved it.
No, but it's really like, you know, that's also sometimes I use the same analogy for PR in general. Yeah. Too often PR gets mistaken as media relations. And media relations often then is deducted to a press release.
That's right.
So if your hammer is the press release, you know, every story looks like a nail. So as PR professionals, we have to also take that step back and think about, okay, let's separate tools and platforms and formats and think about what's the business objective. Business. How can communications help? And then we think about the means or measures.
How to be more strategic.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing, Mr. Lars. You have so many things to look at, so many markets to look at. Given your personal experience in moving ahead continuously, what do you do to achieve mindfulness and navigating challenging times?
That's a good question. I hope I had a perfect answer. I don't. it's really finding ways on, you know, separating myself from the kind of, I call it, the noise of the battle. If you think about what generals do traditionally over centuries, they try not to be at the front line because then they get disturbed and distracted by what's happening right now, right here. So you have to remove yourself a few steps to get a bigger picture. The noise of the battle has to come down. And different people do that in different ways. Like yesterday I went swimming with the kids and just being silly playing ball. Or I play football every Tuesdays to just get my mind off. Sometimes I just, you know, meet people that have nothing to do with the industry again. Different people have different means to separate themselves from the daily grind. To be honest, I probably should do that more often. travel is a great idea, right? Even if it's for work, because it adds perspective. Yeah. And it challenges your status quo. You're thinking like, why are they doing it this way? And they're like, maybe the question is, why are we doing it the other way? and not that way, right? So it's like it's a constant changing perception through changing perspective through different means, listening to music, having a beer, playing football, doing sports, spending time with family or friends, reading books, watching shows. I'm just a big Ted Lasso fan, right? So that kind of belief about the door is a big kind of thing for me, because a lot of times it's really like the sky's the limit if you have the right team pulling together and trying to do something. And then goals don't become something absolute, but it's more like that team spirit that carries you into the direction you want to go.
Wow, that's interesting. What is the recent book that you're reading?
It's from my friend Jessica Schwartz. What's the exact numbers? I think it's 100 or 200 tips for B2B marketing. Worked together. She was our client a couple of years ago and just launched that fantastic book, Jessica Schwartz, about really easy to implement ideas, tips, tricks, tactics that especially B2B marketers can take and run with, instead of these big strategic kind of approaches.
Wow, I'll certainly have a look at that. And Mr. Lars, a lot of people look forward to you for actually gaining a lot of skills that you have for running an organization and becoming a better PR professional. What do you think are the new skills required for becoming a better PR professional or a communication professional these days?
I don't think the core skills have actually changed. If you deduct it back on what makes a good PR professional throughout the times, it means being extremely curious, being extremely keen to get to know what's happening in the world and connecting it with your client's business. That brings us to this. Number one, being always curious. Number two, you have to have a business mindset first. What's the business problem your client faces? How can you translate it into communications strategies and then execute on that? Too often people are just doing a job the answer is a press release, like hammer and nail analogy. Or they don't really try to drill down and understand what's the actual problem. So those are two of the key parts that actually come together. And then you have to have a general empathy, the willingness to understand audiences, what's driving them, why they're doing certain things or why they're not doing certain things. Because that connects how communications becomes more effective and efficient to achieve your client's business objectives. And then throughout the time, you have to learn different tools or different skills to adjust, right? So from just knowing grammar, with Grammarly, that gets already much easier. Basic research, you don't have to run to a library anymore. You can just prompt AI to give you a quick spitting out some pointers, right? But it doesn't take away the idea of how can I help my client today? How do I connect? If you think about it, public relations is really about managing the relationships of a brand with its target audiences. It's relationship management. And that comes on so many different fronts of communications, right? Listening, understanding, that empathetic point, thinking about ethics and values, and then connecting it from a business perspective to execute. I believe our profession too often over-indexes execution before strategy, and it should be the other way around. So
that's an amazing response. Slars, a Precious especially has won around 80 strong multi award for the integrated PR agency, and the recent being the Palo Alto Network. So could you just help us, what was the strategy and how did it lead to winning an award at the APAC Gala in Singapore? So that's a big achievement for you. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We're very humbled to work with the leader in cybersecurity. It's actually just one of many campaigns that we successfully executed. it's really built on the relationship we have with a client, where we co-create, where we challenge each other to do things better. So it was really about establishing the fact that cybersecurity is not a technology problem alone. It combines technology, insights, and people. For that campaign, we really looked into their special unit that looks at deep actionable insights. It's like a Delta Force, right? Or the Navy SEALs kind of thing that come in and really understand what's happening and why, not just blinded by technology, and technology is not always the answer, but looking into what do insights provide us with that we can build action on to secure an organization. And we did that across multiple markets in a staggered rollout and strategy, from thought leadership to insights, research, news and interviews.
Wow, that's amazing. And recently you partnered with Echelon Asia Summit 2023. What is it about? It's happening in June this year, right?
Yes, absolutely. So Echelon is organized by E27, one of the leaders in the media space for startups, innovators, and businesses that want to do better, bringing together venture capital, regulators, startups, corporations, and they're running that now for many years. We actually were the partner pre-COVID, so we are very happy that the event is back, and then we are back working with Echelon and E27. It will be run at Expo in Singapore. It will be a fantastic event to get insights, to connect, to find like-minded people, to possibly connect with investors if that's what you want to do, to get inspired by startups that crack that little nugget that you were cracking your head around, finding out what's next in the fintech space or metaverse. So it's a combination of really thought leadership, insights of people that have done it, getting an idea on what's next in the space, and meeting the whole community of innovators, startups, investors, and governments that really want to drive the future and move the needle.
Wow, amazing. I look forward to this event, certainly I'll attend. And what does the future look like to you right now? Like, how do you see, how do you plan to grow Precious?
The future is out there, and it's for us to decide. For us, a decade on, it's really finding that balance between doubling down on what has worked, but also leaving, some things behind and trying out new ways. It's like what author André Gide said, we can't discover new continents without letting old shorelines disappear from your sight. Like you said or somebody said, a good sailor is not made on still sea. So we wanna go out there. We wanna learn from the communities. We wanna know how we can do a better job. Truth be told, I believe a lot of PR firms are rather stale and safe. There's always somebody more hungry. So also we have to be innovators. We have to be out there and see how can we improve, how can we create effectiveness and efficiencies. And if you look just at greater Southeast Asia, I believe this is the decade where it's happening, right? We have nearly 700 million people here. You have an average GDP growth of 4 to 7%. You have a young, well-educated, mobile-first population. You have relatively, overall, stable and sound governments that put things in place. This region is attracting a lot of foreign direct investments. The whole kind of diversification of supply chains going away from China only benefits this region on a supply chain part, on a production side, on manufacturing, on education, on so many fields. And you have that combination of markets doing different things, from biotech to semiconductors, from automotive to high tech. So it's really absolutely exciting to see how this region is developing, and we are very happy to be part of this growth journey. And beyond Southeast Asia, we're looking at, you know, I believe Hong Kong will have a big comeback, especially in the financial and IR space. We believe India is one of the biggest markets to watch out for, now being the most populous country in the world. Again, also benefiting from the diversification of supply chains. This year, I believe there will be a lot of interesting IPOs in different parts of the world, where we hope to lend a helping hand to clients that want to have sound strategies to communicate about it. ESG is a topic that we all have to take up together. There's only that one planet that we're staying on, and we want to do our part to contribute to that by buying sustainable green energy for our offices, but also doing recycling and working with clients, not getting caught off guard in, you know, into greenwashing or greenwashing, but really communicating soundly on what they're doing on this journey. So there are so many exciting topics. I mean, most innovations that will change our lives are not out there, right? So I'm absolutely excited about this, the journey ahead. And, you know, the more stormy it gets, maybe this year, that means the more we get kind of get our chips on the shoulder that we made it through again. Every economic crisis, interestingly enough, that I witnessed made PR come out stronger compared to other marketing disciplines.
That's amazing, Mr. Lars, and I wish you all the very best for your for the growth of Precious and to your clients who are associated with you. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I think, first of all, again, thanks for inviting me for your podcast. It's a great show. Keep up the good things. And, you know, it's really about collaboration. There is no secret bullet or silver bullet in public relations. It's about really inspiring each other. And, you know, some of the best work we've done is after losing a pitch or not getting it right, because that's the motivation to prove yourself and the market and your client that you can do better and you should do better and that your clients deserve better.
Yeah, it's about bouncing back stronger, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's amazing, Mr. Lars. Thank you so much for taking time and accepting our request again. And do let us know if you have anything else, and if you want to communicate anything to the world, we are happy to help you this way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lars. Thank you. Thank you, Lars, Zar.
Thank you so much. It's been an insightful interview. I've learned a lot.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I'll share the recording with you, Mr. Lars. And the edited recording, so that if you really want to cancel anything, you can just let us know. Also, if you could just share a high resolution picture of yours, that'll be helpful for us to do the promotion. Yeah, and all the best, and we'll catch up someday.
No, absolutely. Let's have coffee or lunch.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thanks. I know. Joel.
I think she froze. Hi, Namita.
Luckily, after the interview.
Yes. Thank you again, Lars. And I'm sorry for the...
Oh, no, I don't feel like I know. We're just starting to work together as well.
Okay. Yeah. I think we can go ahead and leave the meeting. I'll just communicate with Namita offline.
Thanks so much, Lar. Speak to you soon.
Thank you. Namita's here again. You're back.
You guys can hear us. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Lars. Have a good day ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lars.